With Abbot Suger of the Abbot of Saint-Denis in Paris, we remind ourselves that liturgical prayer and the experience of Christian contemplation that occurs during the liturgy, especially in the monastic tradition, is not only an experience of hearing and of speaking, but it is also an experience of vision, of seeing, of the metaphorical sense of beholding or seeing the Lord, but something that is also facilitated by the physical space, by the things we see during the celebration of the liturgy. Abbot Suger was a Benedictine abbot of a monastery which regarded itself as the site which had the most claim to the writings of Dionysius the Areopagite. According to their legendary traditions of foundation, St. Denis, or Dionysius, actually eventually found his way to France and was martyred, and they believe themselves to possess his relics. This is, of course, entirely legendary, and as I mentioned earlier, the dates of Dionysius the Areopagite are not apostolic at all, and probably the individual himself has no real connection with this community. But nevertheless, the community regarded those texts as fundamental to its own sense of understanding, and Abbot Suger in particular was influenced by them, and he left behind some very interesting works on what he was attempting to do with church art. He provided a kind of a background against which we can begin to understand the richness, even the sumptuous nature, of much medieval art. Now, this would be in contrast to the much stronger emphasis on simplicity of the later Cistercian tradition. This would in some senses be regarded as the antithesis to what the Cistercians were trying to achieve just a little while later. But Suger was interested in describing how the architecture of the building and the colors that are used in worship, and in particular in stained glass and in the gems that are used in the very ornate forms of altarware that existed in the medieval tradition, to try to provide an explanation for how these very beautiful things can be windows into eternity. And I already mentioned the text from Dionysius, which was regarded, and probably was regarded by Suger, as emphasizing the quality of the color blue as pertaining to God's transcendence, God's unique quality of being beyond all things. And indeed, there is in the medieval use of blue, and probably related to the way in which it was used during and after the time of the building of the beautiful and first Gothic church of Saint-Denis. It was the first example of Gothic architecture in Europe. The color blue is used in a very specific and focused way to emphasize very often the quality or the sense of transcendence. And it is regarded as one of the chief characteristics of the glory of some of the later medieval churches in Paris, such as Chartres and Notre Dame. But the windows in Saint-Denis themselves also reflect this kind of usage, and it's interesting to remind ourselves that even today, the surroundings in which we find ourselves during the celebration of the liturgy make a difference. The quality of the art that is chosen to stand for God, and even the colors that are used, can be explanations of or hints at something of the glory of the God who lies behind all these things and is symbolized by them. In this section, I've given you a picture of a window from the medieval period, illustrating the use of this blue color. Then under the name Suger is a small bit of stained glass window that is one of the very few depictions of the abbot himself lying at the feet of Christ as the patron for whom this window is dedicated. And in the far right panel, in the upper right, is the Abbey of Saint-Denis, the church, the building of which he concerned himself so greatly. And beneath it, an illustration of some gilded doors. Now, these are not the doors to which this text refers, but they're a kind of a reminder of what this sort of door would have looked like. And the texts themselves are his description of why the bronze doors of the church, which unfortunately have not survived to the present time, why they can be a way into a meditation on God. And he says, don't marvel at the gold or the expense, but rather look at the craftsmanship. Look at the labor that resulted in the creation of this work. The work is itself bright, but being bright, the work, he says, should brighten the minds, clarificet mentes, so that they may travel through the true lights to that true light, where Christ is the true door. So the decoration of the church, the glory of these gilded bronze doors, is for the purpose of enabling one to realize that Christ is the door. And these become a kind of a symbolic and indeed a kind of a contemplative reminder of who God is. And he says that through this beauty, the dull mind through material things can rise up to truth and can, in a sense, by beholding light, be resurrected. So there was a mysticism of light which Suger propagated and which was taken on by many artists of the period and by many theoreticians, both of the liturgy and of liturgical prayer, that the use of light in the church is vitally important. And the times of the day during which the church is bathed in this light, which filtered through stained glass windows that made careful use of this blue, could themselves be a kind of a dusky, transcendent reminder of the glorious God who is present both in brightness and in, as it were, the darkness, which the color blue represented. So there is a sense in which the place in which the liturgy is celebrated is also of importance. He also has a text in which he's describing his administration, the things he did. He's also justifying why he believed that it was appropriate to use ornate and gilded and even gem-encrusted objects. And that's, he says, because the loveliness of the many colored gems, the multicolored quality of this light that is reflected, transfers that which is material to that which is immaterial. Meditation invites him to transfer from the material a sense of that which lies beyond matter into the diversity of the sacred virtues. He finds himself, as it were, lifted up in contemplation of these beautiful colors that the gems reflect to a sense of the purity of heaven. He says, by the grace of God, transported from this inferior world to a higher place, in what he calls an anagogical, literally an upward lifting fashion. So we are often these days very tempted to condemn the use of precious materials in church art and to wonder how this material could have been better used. But at the same time, there was a tradition in which the use of these things, which would have been available to everyone, the gloriously decorated church, became the property of all. The richest to the poorest could enter into this place, the very light of which reflected and expressed something of the glory of God, and by experiencing the liturgy in this place, could be, as it were, transported through the use of material things into a sense of the God who lies beyond all matter.